2-2, a swing and a fly ball, pretty well hit to left field. Gonzalez is back, running out of room, and she's gone. Corey Seager with an opposite field two-run homer. And the 0-2, and a swing and a fly ball to left center field. It's hit pretty well. It is gone! Marwin Gonzalez homers off Jansen, and the Astros have tied the game. Set, and the 2-0, and a swing and a ball well hit. Deep left center field. Altuve with a home run. Now here's another one. Correa hits one a mile to left into the seats. Tosses the bat way high up into the air towards his teammate. It's over by the dugout. Back-to-back home runs, and the Astros lead 5-3. And the pitch. And a swing and a ball hit like a rocket to left field and way back into the seats. Puig with a home run. And the pitch. And a swing and a base hit into right field. Forsyth around third coming home. Reddick's throw to the plate is not in time. And now the Dodgers have tied it. 2 on a Springer, and a swing and a ball well hit to right center field. Hernandez giving chase, not going to get there, and it is gone. It carried right over the fence in right center, and the Astros take the lead yet again. Winds and works, swing and a miss, he got him, and the Astros win it in one of the craziest games you will ever see or hear or be a part of.
I've been part of some pretty exciting games. With all that this one entailed, to be in the World Series and to be down a game, and I mean, the roller coaster of emotion, I mean, this is an instant classic, and to be able to be a part of it is pretty special.
Stanley Johnson with a jumper. Yes!
Nice.
Stanley Johnson up gunning. Why not? Langston Galloway way up to Tobias for the jam. Ish all the way to the rim. Andre with a tap, and now another. Avery Bradley topside. Tobias fires, fills it. Avery Bradley's open. He connects. Avery can feel it. Fires, fills it up.
We played 45 minutes of really good, most complete game we've played all year. I'm not going to talk about the first 3 minutes. Any win lifts your spirits. Any win is good. I'm not downplaying. I mean, winning's what it's all about. It's just, you just can't have a must-win game in game five of an 82-game season. I don't care if you're 0-4. There's just not must-win games in October, unless you're playing baseball.
I don't know if I could put my hand on it or my foot on it right now. It'd be much better. It's just taking us too much time to get into the game, like getting to the flow of the game. Teams are playing with a faster pace than us to start the game. We have to figure that out for sure. That's what this league is now. This league is a three-point shot, and, you know, we got to get adjusted to that and cover that line.
Go out there and execute better, but don't try to be perfect. I think that's what we got caught up in when we got to the Oklahoma game, knowing it was a big time game that, you know, everybody wanted to make the plays, everybody wanted to play mistake free, but in a game of football, nobody's played the perfect game.
Other than one game, and it happened to be against the best defense we faced this year, so we're all realistic about what's coming down. This happens to be the number one pass defense in America, I believe. He's been very consistent other than that one game. As I've said for many, many, many years, it's the quarterback gets too much blame and too much success aimed at him when it's really because we protected much better the last few weeks. The receivers are doing an excellent job. But what have you done for me late? We're going to find out against this team.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And an extravaganza is exactly what we have in store for you this afternoon. What is going on? Hope you're having an outstanding Thursday afternoon. It's 12 minutes after 3. A tremendous montage put together there by Mr. Jim Kushlin, covering virtually all of the bases, even though they didn't have to cover a lot of the bases last night in Game 2 of the World Series. Because when you're trotting around them, as balls are being launched out of the yard at record rates, there's not really any need to cover them. And that's what happened in a home run festival extra inning style last night. The Houston Astros pulled the series even at one game apiece. How about that? And it didn't take a dominant Justin Verlander start to get that done. How about that? Nobody would have, if you'd have told me going into this game, Justin Verlander against Rich Hill, we're going to have a 7-6 final, I would have said no, not so much, not really going to be believing that one. Justin Verlander and the Astros get it done in a little bit more unconventional style. Verlander was good, by the way, was very good. You go six innings in Game 2 of the World Series, give up just two hits, you've done well. Problem is, he did give up three earned runs. He struck out five, walked a pair as well. But he was good. Just wasn't the dominant Justin Verlander that he has been since he arrived in Houston and put on that Astros cap for the first time. He had been, going into yesterday, 9-0 with an ERA of 1.22 since becoming a Stro, and that includes this postseason. So, but Verlander went 6, and that's something Rich Hill wishes he could have done. Rich Hill, furious, as are many, many Dodger fans right now. If you watch the game, we're not going to spend all day long on the World Series, but just a few comments to kind of lead it off, much as we did in the montage. Dodger fans and Rich Hill furious with Dave Roberts for the decision to yank him after, what, 60 pitches? 60 pitches and just 4 innings. Why, when somebody is dealing the way he was dealing, 60 in 4 innings, he gave up just the 1 earned run. He struck out 7. He obviously had his good stuff. He did walk 3 and give up 3 hits, but he left the game with a lead. Why, after 60 pitches, and you know the story by now if you've been paying attention or if you've been listening to any of the national shows, they believe in analytics. Out there in Dodger Town, they believe in analytics. And they didn't want to have Rich Hill face the Astros lineup a third time through. For whatever reason, they just believed that the third time through, it's more likely that he's going to get lit up. I heard a stat this morning on Mike and Mike, by the way, that completely destroys that belief. It just completely destroys it. And Golic gave this, you know, they give him his great big pack of stats and information. I wish I had somebody doing that for me. I got to look up all my own crap 90% of the time. And that's not a knock on you, Kush. That's just, they have a staff of like, you know, a dozen people for those two hosts.
Yeah, I'm only one guy.
I know, right? No, that's not a dig on you. That's just, man, they got numbers coming out the yin yang because they got a billion people to collect them. Anyway.
If only I had that at my disposal, you know.
Right, yeah, right? Wouldn't that be nice? But I'm going to have to try to do it from memory now. But in the 100 and some odd batters that that Rich Hill faced a third time through the lineup in his starts this season, they hit only 180 off of him and only 6 extra base hits. In other words, he's not a guy where, at least historically this season, in the regular season, where – you know, once he gets guys fooled a couple times through, now they know what to do with him, and then they yank him all over the place. And not, I don't mean the manager, I mean the hitters just, you know, jerk him all over the yard the third time through or the fourth time through. It just isn't true. But yet that's what Roberts and the Dodger staff, you know, goes by. They go by that that analytics, and Rich Hill was upset. Dave Roberts called it an emotional roller coaster because he knew that Hill was very, very angry, but he still believes it was right to go to his bullpen for the final 6 innings. Obviously, they didn't expect it to go extra innings, but indeed it did, and what an amazing extra. I will say this, Jim, if you like pitcher's duels and if you like shootouts, in a manner of speaking, you got a little bit of each yesterday. Because the both starters were very, very good. And
yeah.
If you like a 2-1 or a 3-1 game, you know, in a postseason game, you had to be really liking the edge of the seat. Wow, but, you know, boy, both pitchers are on. Both pitchers are getting a lot of strikeouts. Both pitchers are keeping, you know, everything contained. But then it exploded into a shootout, into a home run festival once you got into the bullpens. And you really had a little bit of everything in that game last night. And if you like postseason baseball, if you like baseball, period, then you had to have enjoyed last night. And there's really no reason anybody couldn't have walked away from that and saying, I can't wait to see the final 5 games. And I think it will go 7. I really do. That I want to see the final 5 games of this series.
Oh, and I'm with you. It's now guaranteed to go a minimum 5. I think it's going no less than 6. And 7... really can very much seem likely, and pretty much everything you said there, Bob, is spot on about this. In terms of the analytics thing that's been blowing up today, for what it's worth, I think it was the wrong move at the time, pitch counts and all that other stuff. It could have left a Hill in there for at least one more, but in a technical manner of speaking, it was all kind of fine until the late 8th and then into the 9th inning with Jansen. Heard another stat, and I'm going to go ahead and mention this one because sure. I guess tease, this is not the wild stat, although it could have easily been. Dodgers were 98-0 when leading at, going into the 9th inning before last night. So he went with what he's done all season, and of course...
Yeah, but nobody didn't. He didn't yank Rich Hill after 60 pitches all season, after the fourth inning, and expect six innings of bullpen work. He didn't do that all season.
Later on, they eventually got there, but of course, as we know, in postseason, everybody seems to have shorter leaves.
Your 98-0 is after the lead with the eighth inning.
That means
you close games out well in the ninth. That's fine, but what they did is unusual.
I mean, what Roberts did
last night is unusual, because he doesn't yank his starter after four innings most times and expect six innings out of your bullpen.
No, absolutely true, and that's the difference right there between a regular season game and a postseason game, especially in the last handful of years. You know, if this was a regular season game, Hill would have been out there for, assuming he kept going at this pace, six or maybe even seven innings. I do agree that at times they overthink things and pull starters out, you know, a little too early. I mean, heck, part of what we're saying right now kind of reminds me of when the Indians were still playing and we were talking about Sabathia in game two against the Indians. He was rolling. And then they took him out, and that entire fiasco from the Yankee point of view of an inning happened, and the Indians went on to win. That's one of those times when pulling your starter, who's doing very, very well, is a bad thing. That wouldn't have happened, you know, in the regular season.
Yeah, no, that is very, very true. That would not have happened in the regular season. And it's interesting. I understand that in the postseason, everything changes. A starter can become a reliever. We'll do whatever we have to do in a given situation. And if you want to use a guy on short rest and you feel like he's done his job and given you the lead that you can hold, you might yank somebody a lot earlier,
solely
so he can come back on 3 days or 4 days. You know, that is possible. Clayton Kershaw could come back in game four on short rest, perhaps, because he had very short work. What did he throw? You think he went 80 pitches in game one?
I'm triple checking because it wasn't a ton.
I think it was only like 80
that.
Pitches. So, you know, he can come back.
83 to be exact.
So he can go on regular rest in game five or short rest in game four and potentially be there for game seven, too, because his workload wasn't that heavy. So
there
is more to it than just, you know, winning this game. And so I don't think everybody should be killing Dave Roberts for the decision that he made. Because it did not work out in winning that game, but you can make a case for him in saying that he was trying to make sure that he was going to have more of Rich Hill later than riding him and going 100 pitches, for example, or going, you know, six innings and ignoring the third time through the lineup rule, even if he felt like he was doing his thing. So there's a case to be made on both sides, basically.
Yeah, and obviously, as mentioned, that this would not be a discussion in the regular season because this is not how the regular season in baseball, you know, would operate. But
this is
one of those times where at the end of the day, even though the Dodgers still had a lead, turning it over to Jansen in the ninth after all that, this feels like one of those where, you know, you still probably took your starter maybe an inning too early.
So let's talk about the home runs. Let's talk about the postseason home runs. We could all, you know what, Jim? Let's do this. Let me do the wild stat here so that I can tell this part of the story that I want to do. Let's get our wild stat in.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the wild stat of the day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
I think it's better to do it now than talk around it while I tell this next part of the story. And last night's World Series game two in L.A. turned out to be indeed a home run bonanza as far as World Series games go. Last night, the two teams combined for 8 jacks, which is a World Series record for a single game. There are also now a grand total of 21 extra inning home runs in World Series games throughout history, 21 of them. 4 of the 21, about one-fifth of all of the extra innings home runs hit in World Series history, happened last night alone. That is indeed a wild stat. Your Buffalo Wild Wings wild stat of the day. So now that I got that out, I can go ahead and talk about this. Dallas Keuchel, the Astros game one starter, is done biting his tongue about this. He says, period, the balls are juiced. Now, if you might look at a pitcher and say, really, anybody for the Astros or for the Dodgers who are watching balls fly out of the yard at such a crazy pace, you know, you might just think that these guys have a little bit of sour grapes. They're just looking for an excuse. How come they're folding in the moment while the hitters are rising up? And that's why they're making up these stories. But this is not the first guy to say this, and it's not just happening here in the World Series. There are more and more pitchers who are convinced that the baseballs are not being made the same way. This year's home run record, and I don't remember the number, but it was, what, 5,300 and some odd crazy, 5,500, I don't remember.
All I do remember is more it was passed runs. With about 2.5 weeks still left in the season.
Well, they passed it with about what did you say, they passed it with 2.5 weeks?
I think it was like almost two full weeks left in the season
when
the record got passed.
Yeah, I was going to say about a week and a half or two, they passed the record. So they have more home runs hit this season than ever before. That part is absolutely true. And now in the World Series, as we said, 1/5 of the extra inning home runs in World Series history happened last night alone. So Dallas Keuchel said, look, this is just the way that it is. He told USA Today, obviously the balls are juiced. I think they're juiced 100%, but it is what it is, and I'm glad we came out on top. Keuchel, as we know, lost in Game 1 after a brilliant performance from Clayton Kershaw. However, he noted the quality of the batters that are hitting home runs with regularity now. Keuchel said there are really powerful guys in this league, and they're going to get theirs. But where you can tell a difference is the mid-range guy who's hitting 20-plus home runs now. That doesn't happen. That's just not supposed to happen. Oh, here's the total. It's in this story, Jim.
Okay.
I said 5,500. I was under by 600. 6,105 home runs were hit this year. A record in a season. Keuchel actually did very well in that category. He only gave up 15 this season, decidedly middle of the pack among pitchers. The Astros have lived and died by the long ball all season, a trend that has continued in this series. And Keuchel said this is what Major League Baseball wants. Quote, they want that exciting 2-home run lead, and when the Dodgers, came back and hit another home run and everybody's still watching, that's what they want. That's what they're getting. End quote. So he's saying he thinks that the powers that be in baseball, commissioner's office, owners, etc., the marketers in particular, they don't want a game that anybody will turn off because the lead looks out of reach. They don't want anybody to say, oh my God, it's a 5-run lead going into the eighth, because guess what? A couple of 2-run homers and it's a 1-run game going into the ninth. This is what baseball has become. Welcome to the new age of baseball conspiracies. The late 90s are back. The future is now. And the future is corked up baseballs. That isn't Keuchel. That is from CBS Sports telling the Dallas Keuchel story. Kush, you buying it? You believe in Dallas Keuchel? Or do you think that this is just, you know, what we talked about in the middle of the season as the pace at the All-Star break even for single season home runs was, you know, was astronomical. Was this just, everybody swings from the heels now. Strikeouts are up too. So everybody's swinging from the heels. So you're either going to get everything and drive it out of the yard, or you're going to get nothing and spin yourself into the ground. Because those are the two things that most people were willing to grant as far as the home run totals. That either, players are just swinging from the heels now because the strikeout isn't as much of a sin as it used to be. It's considered to be acceptable, especially if you have high home run totals, or the balls are juiced. And Dallas Keuchel is saying it's not the former, it's the latter.
You know, I've been trying to be wary of this particular theory that's been thrown around, you know, over the course of the year. I have come across over the course of the season some articles here and there to suggest that during production they're tweaking it a little bit, but I'm not fully buying this. I am fully buying that latter part of what you're saying, because that is obvious to anyone who knows baseball that guys have changed approach. There's no such thing as rarely, I should say. There are a couple guys out there. Altuve is one. Jose Ramirez, when he's hitting well, is one of them, who have no problem going to, you know, all fields. This is a whole bunch of things that have have come together, you know, at the same type of time. And for the most part, most guys, yeah, they are swinging for the fences all the time. And in terms of how that's gone, the biggest thing that I see is, and I'm trying to find it. Baseballreference.com is a one, you know, great site, especially if you don't have one of those old school baseball encyclopedias anymore. On the single season strikeout record, and I came by this.
Yeah, but you don't even need to get the total. We just know it's big.
It has nothing to do necessarily with the total. It's something I first came across because on the site they have a bunch of pictures of the various players who are like the top 20 or 30 or whatever on whatever, you know, leaders list you're on. And if you find and you go to single season strikeouts, what you'll find is the guy who was once upon a time and held the record for nearly two decades as number one, most strikeouts in a single season, Bobby Bonds, from one of the years in the 1970s, he's now 30th. And there's all sorts of Adam Dunns and all the rest that have played in the last 10 to 15 years that are all ahead of him now. Because they don't adjust to the shifts, which are constant. It's not the stigma of striking out, as you were pointing out, the way it used to be. And I still believe that that has more to it than almost anything else. They're taking the Mickey Mantle approach. Mickey Mantle was once quoted saying, are you trying to hit a home run whenever you step up the plate? And Mickey's response was, every time. That's everybody's attitude now. And if they strike out, no big deal.
Yeah, but I'm going to disagree. I'm going to disagree because it is a big deal. Ask managers. Ask managers if they need the ball put in play in order to, you know, to try to get on base, even if it is by way of an error, an overplay, or whatever the case might be. I think, let's interview some managers. Let's look up some interviews with managers. Let's talk to them about whether or not
strikeouts are pulling their hair out about this.
Because managers still aren't happy,
right,
with a guy who has, you know, 35 home runs and an on-base percentage of 225. Sorry, they need the ball in play. They need walks. They need the ball in play. They're not happy with all of these strikeouts. I don't think, and I'll tell you what, Dallas Keuchel makes a point to me when he talks about some of these middle guys. When I say middle guys, you know, I know the game changed a little bit for shortstops back in the Alex Rodriguez, Nomar Garciaparra, Derek Jeter era, when they kind of became the first shortstops to turn into massive power hitters.
Because they wanted to be like Cal.
Yeah, exact Cal. Okay, and then Cal, who was one too, to a certain extent, of course. It wasn't like that before then. It just wasn't. They were special guys, though. They were special guys. Middle infielders hitting 30 home runs a season were very, very few and far between. Those were special guys who kind of started that. And now, you know, a guy like Frankie Lindor.
Yeah.
Francisco Lindor is a very, very good player. He has a very, very good approach when he steps to the plate. And he's also now the all-time single-season home run hitter for switch-hitting shortstops.
Yeah.
At age 23 or whatever the hell he is, and he doesn't look like he's much bigger than you. So,
and he doubled his home run total between 16 and 17.
Exactly. And so I'm not going to buy this. He's just suddenly swinging from the heels because he doesn't care about strikeouts. No, I think a lot of deep fly ball outs that a lot of these guys are hitting now that are turning into two-run home runs or three-run home runs are indeed a little bit suspect. And that I think Dallas Keuchel is right to question whether or not the balls are juiced. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that. That's just the tip of the iceberg. We're not going to do baseball all day long, but I do have to get some of that in. The reason why is because coming up at 4:10 or so, we're going to talk about the showdown in college football this week. It is the second-ranked Penn State Nittany Lions coming to the Horseshoe to take on the Buckeyes for Big Ten supremacy, for playoff positioning, all of these things. It's a rematch of last year, a very, very big game. Buckeyes looking for some vengeance. Penn State looking to do it again. And, you know, this is the second of their three-game little gauntlet between Michigan, Ohio State, and then Michigan State. Very big game. Paul Keel's going to break it down for us, talk about things from the Buckeyes' perspective. Then we're going to get to UT football coming up at about 4:40 as well, because Jason Candle, the second highest paid coach in the MAC, by the way. I don't know why they started listing all of the coaches' salaries, but they did. Jim Harbaugh no longer the highest paid coach in America, by the way. It is indeed Nick Saban making about $11 million a year to Harbaugh's $9 million. But anyway, Jason Candle, second highest paid coach in the MAC, doing great work for the UT Rockets. They play tonight. They get into these midweek football games now as the MAC schedule turns into late October and into November. So they've got Ball State on the road tonight. We're going to hear from Jason Candle at about 4:40 this afternoon. So we got all of that coming up. What else do we have? Oh, speaking of college football, we have this, a border battle. You do realize, do you not, that we are just about a month away? In fact, what is today, the 26th? 1 month from yesterday away
Yeah.
from Border battle between the Buckeyes and the Wolverines. This year it is up in Ann Arbor, and the Ticket and Yuengling want you to attend. We got a contest for you here. November 25th, you can arrive and return in style from Total Image Limousine, too, if you're the grand prize winner of this contest. Runner-up prize is a trip for two to the Big Ten Championship game, December 2nd at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. For a chance to qualify, go to the website, 1065theticket.com. Register one time there or text the word border battle, one word, border battle, to 64636. And if you qualify, you'll attend our giveaway party on Thursday night, November 16th, at the Blarney downtown to see if you are the winner. All brought to you by Yuengling, True House of Munch, Get-Go Transportation, Churchill's, Country Hearth, Tass Electronics, Distracted Haunted House, and your football freaks right here at the Ticket. All right, so now we're going to get that bottom of the hour sports center. We'll come back, talk a little more baseball. We got some football to get into. How about the Pistons getting a nice win? Stan Van Gundy, that was a pretty funny quip we heard in the montage. And the Cavaliers, early returns on the experiment of new guys, train wreck. They lost to the woe-big-on Brooklyn Nets yesterday. And even though the Nets have won a few games, they still stink. But last night, the Cavaliers got a triple-double from LeBron James and stunk even worse. So we'll talk about that, too, as we continue. It's 3:35 right here, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
All right, I said I wasn't going to talk about baseball the entire day today, and I'm not. But we did just throw a poll up on our Twitter feed. If you follow us on Twitter, you'll see it. If you don't, well, you should. Follow us on Twitter at Sports Radio 106.5, Sports Radio 106.5. And here's what the Twitter poll says. Astros pitcher Dallas Keuchel says last night's World Series home run binge is proof that the ball is juiced. Do you believe him? Your choices are yep, home run totals are crazy, or no, pitchers are whining. You tell us what you think. Get on Twitter, Sports Radio 106.5, and tell us what you think, and we'll update that. And if you have some comments, in addition to voting, we would like to read your comments on the radio. All right, so we've got a big football game coming up on Saturday. We've got another big football game coming up on Sunday. The Saturday game is Penn State and Ohio State. We're going to talk to Paul Keels coming up at about 4:10. Cushland Sunday, it's the Lions coming back from their bye week and trying to get back on the winning track. They have lost three out of their last four after a very promising start to the season. They are now at 500. Back-to-back losses to Carolina and to New Orleans, and now they have the Steelers who are playing the best football they have played all season. They looked a little sloppy, did Pittsburgh, when they beat the Browns 21-18 in the opener. Then they kind of put it together defensively, especially against Minnesota, before struggling and losing to the Chicago Bears and to Jacksonville, in which they got blown out. But, boy, they put together a couple of very impressive wins back-to-back over the previously undefeated Chiefs, excuse me, and then a dominating victory defensively, especially against the Cincinnati Bengals. So now they come to Ford Field on Sunday, and they're going to do it with a new starting wide receiver opposite Antonio Brown because they have benched Martavis Bryant. Martavis Bryant demoted in practice yesterday to the second team for the Steelers because of his, well, I can't say his mouth, it's more his thumbs. It's his social media. He's got a Donald Trump problem. Donald Trump can do a lot of really great things with his policies during the day and then undo all of them with a bunch of undisciplined tweets, outside of the job and ticking people off. Well, Martavis Bryant doing the same thing here. He has ticked off enough people to the point where he has been benched. His criticism of the Steelers' offense for essentially not getting him the football enough, not getting enough targets, veered into more dangerous territory when he specifically complained that a teammate was getting more of them, not Antonio Brown, but specifically rookie Juju Schuster-Smith. You start popping off about teammates on social media, you start popping off about wanting a trade, chances are you're not going to be viewed very favorably by your teammates and by your coach, and they have benched him for this game. Now, by benching, I don't know if that means he is going to be deactivated and will not be in uniform. I haven't seen that part of the story yet or not, or it just means he is no longer a starter. He will come off of the bench and perform in whatever role that they decide they wanted to make him. Do you think this helps the Lions, or is he not a big enough part of that offense, Kush, to even, you know, make that much of a difference on Sunday?
That's a tricky question. I mean, we know he has the potential to have been that type of player, but he's not really doing it this year, and now this flame out. I think on paper it does help the Lions a little bit, but their secondary still has to perform, especially against all not named Antonio Brown, and obviously he's going to be a load, as he always is for any defensive back. But I think technically it helps the Lions a little bit.
Just the discord, maybe, in Pittsburgh, I think, is what might help the Lions.
Yeah.
You know, not just Bryant not being part of the – and by the way, for his part, too, we should also point out that Ben Roethlisberger has basically said, I don't care, he can whine as much as he wants. And I'm paraphrasing some of that, obviously, where he didn't put it in those harsh terms.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, I'm not going to target him anymore just because he's mad about not getting targets. I'm going to follow the play. I'm going to follow my reads, and I'm going to go where I need to go to make the right football decision, not because I got to keep this guy happy. You know, and that's probably the right – no, not probably. That is the right approach. I will have to say, though, I'm a little bit surprised by that, that he would say that publicly. The right approach would be to do – I think any quarterback would do is to make the reads, follow the play, follow the progression to where it's supposed to be. And if he's the primary target on a play and he's open, you get it to him. If he isn't,
yeah,
you know, you do what you got to do, obviously. But Roethlisberger said publicly, I'm not going to go to him just because he's happy. And a little surprised, because a lot of quarterbacks would just try to keep their receivers happy. Bottom line is, the Steelers' offense missed Martavis Bryant last year. They did, in a big, big way, and especially when Antonio Brown got hurt and when they went to New England and lost to the Patriots in the AFC Championship game. They really missed Martavis Bryant, who was out with his suspension for multiple drug offenses. You know, you would think, I want to keep that guy happy, and that maybe he would say something like, I am always going to look for great talented receivers, and I'm going to make plays wherever the plays might be. And if it's Martavis, we're going to get him the ball, and if it's not, we'll go someplace else. But, yeah, we are always looking, you know, some sort of diplomatic thing like that. Instead, Roethlisberger just said, not going to do it. I'm not going to throw to the guy just to keep him happy.
And I find that part of it, you know, kind of interesting. It tells me a combination of a couple things. One, the overall Steelers and the culture they have, where, you know what, your whining is irrelevant to our winning. And two, that tells me that Ben Roethlisberger, kind of like the team in a way, doesn't care as long as we're winning. And if you're going to mess that up, then tough on you.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. He did say, by the way, and maybe this is a little bit of a, you know, softening it a little bit, but Roethlisberger also said that he really hopes for lots of touchdown passes to Martavis Bryant. He's just not going to force anything to keep him happy, which, of course, is the right thing to do. Herm Edwards, by the way, speaking on SportsCenter today, said this is exactly what Mike Tomlin should have done. This is necessary.
After a week that saw him complaining about the amount of touches he got and requesting a trade that was denied, Martavis Bryant was demoted to the scout team at practice today by head coach Mike Tomlin. Coach Herm Edwards with us. Coach, what do you think about Tomlin's decision?
By the way, are they really reaching for SportsCenter talent on SportsCenter these days? ESPN is reaching. Okay. You know what happened. You know, back what, Jim? We talked about it. We covered it 6 months ago, I think it was. There was a massive purge
right.
of some of their high-priced talent because ESPN is hemorrhaging money and losing subscribers, which they are. And they're replacing them, from what I can tell, with some very, very young, inexperienced, and in my estimation, inappropriate talent for these casts. I want to hear from Herm. I don't want to hear from anybody else.
I think it was a great decision. When you think about this team right now, they're 5-2. They've had a couple distractions along the way with this 5-2 record, and I think he's sending a message to the locker room and to the players. Look, we're in the playoff hunt right now. We have a chance to win our division. This is about the team. And when you go out and press send, and I always tell players, don't press send, and you don't come in my office to discuss maybe how you're feeling about how we're using you, these are the consequences.
If you press send, you lose the game. Sorry, I just did a little paraphrase there.
Nice.
No, but I mean, those questions used to be asked by the likes of Rich Eisen or Stu Scott, obviously rest his soul. People like that. It's rough to me listening to some other people who don't really shouldn't be asking those questions. Here's Martavis Bryant on the suspension that he came back from.
No, I worked hard to get back, but nobody gave me that thing. Then nobody helped me get back. I made myself get back. And I
Since the background guys are yelling so loudly, you can't hear him completely. So he said that didn't nobody help me come back from that suspension. I did that myself. In other words, I don't have to show loyalty to this team that brought me back after my suspension because they didn't help me do this. I did this myself, meaning he got himself cleaned up, made sure he was sober, make sure he passes all of his drug tests, et cetera, et cetera. So good for him on that front. He also said the following. Again, I'm not going to bother with the audio because it's not as good on the radio as I'd hoped it would be. He also said about his demand for a trade and his behavior going forward, quote, "If I'm not traded, I'm going to work my butt off here, and whatever happens, happens. You're not going to hear me complaining no more. I'm just going to be quiet and let everything fall into place." Well, that's the first wise thing that he has said about this. If you didn't keep tabs on this at home, what he originally said that got himself in trouble and got him demoted to second team here, ultimately benched for this game against the Lions, he was responding to a fan on Instagram who said that rookie Juju Smith-Schuster is better than he is. And Bryant said that Smith-Schuster is, quote, "nowhere near better than me, fool. All they need to do is give me what I want, and y'all can have Juju and whoever else." And the presumption here, of course, is that what he wants is a trade. Mike Tomlin said Tuesday that he would rain down appropriate punishments on Bryant for that comment, and while making it clear that his receiver, Bryant, is not available in trade. Bryant referred to his agent, Thomas Anatello, when pressed for details on his frustration. And that's when he said, "If I'm not traded, I'll just work my butt off here and let everything fall into place." So we'll see. It is an interesting thing, but I think it's something that the Lions might be able to take advantage of, perhaps, because he is, you know, even though Juju Schuster-Smith, I keep saying Schuster-Smith, and it's Smith-Schuster, even though Juju, the rookie from USC, is you know, kind of coming into his own and starting to make some plays. Martavis Bryant is a big, big weapon. World-class speed, makes some tremendous catches, was a huge, huge part of the offense for the Steelers the last couple of years that they've gone deep into the playoffs. And his absence and his dissension among the ranks that he's causing can only help the Lions a little bit coming back. Kush, we talked about this on 2 weeks ago, basically. I'm trying to remember the date. Doesn't matter. I guess it would have been the 15th, Sunday the 15th against the Saints down there in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. We said, is it a must-win game, even in October? Well, we said yes, and they didn't win it. So I guess it's fair to say now that this home game against the Steelers is also must-win, yes?
It's definitely bordering. Yeah, it's bordering on it. You need to be able to get yourself back in the right frame of mind, especially with a Monday night at Green Bay after that. Then you get the
two straight primetime games, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, two straight primetime games before reprieve against the Browns, and then I think the Bears were after that. So
they get a second bye week.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you could call it that.
They got the real bye week in week 7, and then they get the bye week against the Browns in week number 10.
Yeah, exactly. But the way things are kind of shaping up, here's why I'm not 1,000% sure if this is the must win, because then you could kind of make similar arguments for next week against Green Bay. And, of course, that's a divisional opponent on top of that. So my thoughts on this is 0-2 in these next two before you get the Browns. That'll kill them, because then they'll be 3-5. And sure, they could easily then be 5-5 after taking on the Browns and Bears. But you don't want to be in that position. This is what we talked about even before the New Orleans game.
Yeah, but I'm therefore hesitant to even talk about 0-2 in these next two simply because of the Rodgers factor. I mean, I think the Green Bay game is an entirely different animal now, even though you got to go to Lambeau, the house of horrors for them for so many years.
And that's precisely why, for me, the game that's more of a must-win is actually the Monday nighter next week, because what you just said, no Aaron Rodgers, though it's in Lambeau. Divisional opponent, but you got to take advantage of Rodgers being there. If any of these two are blatant must-wins, I think next week's a little more than this one.
I would, well, So in other words, basically they have to go at least 1-1 in these two.
Oh yeah, definitely. They have to go at least 1-1.
Then the next one certainly is, especially because it's a division game, so it carries more weight anyway. That one would be a must win. But for me, just again, because maybe I put too much into the confidence, team confidence things, that sort of thing. But I do. I put more into that. And when they were 3-1 and were climbing power rankings on ESPN, CBS, Fox, all of the different rankings, they're a top 10 team. They were a top 10 National Football League team. Not that that means squad. It's not like college football rankings, which influence playoff decision makers on the committee. But from a hey, look at who we are, look at how we're viewed standpoint now, I think that meant a lot. And they this isn't just a pretend team. It's not a paper facade. It's not just Matthew Stafford covering up for so many of the other glaring weaknesses. They were running the ball. They were playing great defense. They were getting a lot of great pressure on quarterbacks. All of these things were happening. And then three losses out of five, or excuse me, out of four in a row. You make it four out of five. You got three out of four now. If you make it four out of five with this loss to the Steelers, I don't know. I think it does some damage to the psyche. And then even if you win in Lambeau, you're beating a non-Aaron Rodgers team. I don't know how much more you get before you then beat a Cleveland team, which is like beating, you know, somebody's JVs. And then Chicago, again, back to the division. So I don't want to play too far out. I just think the Steelers game is a hell of a lot bigger than maybe it could have been and should have been because of the recent losing skid that they're on. And I certainly hope that the Martavis Bryant situation works out in the Lions' favor. What I got going on here? Oh, I know what I've got going on here. I have got Kansas tickets. That's what I've got. And I want to give you a pair of tickets to go see Kansas. Where Carry On, Wayward Son. How come I'm not hearing Carry On, Wayward Son? We probably should be right now. Anyway, we've got Kansas tickets are going to come to the Stranahan Theater on November 4th. That's what
carry
it is.
On, yeah.
Thank you. Ask and you shall receive. Yeah, that makes it feel a little bit better when I give these tickets away. Kansas, Stranahan, November 4. Got a pair of tickets with your name on them. If you are caller number, I don't know, Kush, you pick the number.
7. Lucky 7.
Lucky 7 it shall be. Caller number 7-866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. We're going to send you to go see Kansas on November 4th. Then we are going to get ourselves a top-of-the-hour local sports center and come back and talk to Paul Keels, the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes, at about 4:10 right here on.
And the 1-2 is swinging a fly ball, pretty well hit to left field. Gonzalez is back, running out of room, and she's gone. Corey Seager with an opposite field two-run homer. And the 0-2, and a swing and a fly ball to left center field. It's hit pretty well. It is gone! Marwin Gonzalez homers off Jansen, and the Astros have tied the game. Set and the 2-0, and a swing and a ball well hit. Deep left center field. Altuve with a home run. Now here's another one. Correa hits one a mile to left into the seats. Tosses the bat way high up into the air towards his teammate over by the dugout. Back-to-back home runs, and the Astros lead 5-3. And the pitch. And a swing and a ball hit like a rocket to left field and way back into the seats. Puig with a home run. And the pitch. And a swing and a base hit into right field. Forsyth around third coming home. Reddick's throw to the plate is not in time. And now the Dodgers have tied it. 2-1 to Springer, and a swing and a ball well hit to right center field. Hernandez giving chase, not going to get there, and it is gone. It carried right over the fence in right center, and the Astros take the lead yet again. Wines and Wirth, swing and a miss, he got him, and the Astros win it in one of the craziest games you will ever see or hear or be a part of.
I've been part of some pretty exciting games with all that this one entailed, to be in the World Series and to be down a game, and I mean, the roller coaster of emotion. I mean, this is an instant classic, and to be able to be part of it is pretty special.
Go out there and execute better, but don't try to be perfect. I think that's what we got caught up in when we got to the Oklahoma game, knowing it was a big time game that, you know, everybody wanted to make the plays, everybody wanted to play mistake free, but in a game of football, nobody's played the perfect game.
Other than one game, and it happened to be against the best defense we faced this year, so we're all realistic about what's coming down. This happens to be the number one pass defense in America, I believe. He's been very consistent other than that one game. As I've said for many, many, many years, it's the quarterback gets too much blame and too much success aimed at him when it's really because we protected much better the last few weeks. The receivers are doing an excellent job. But what have you done for me late? We're going to find out against this team.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
All right, 11 minutes after 4. Thanks for being with us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. And congratulations to Lois. Lois Mixer of Grand Rapids won the Kansas tickets for November 4th at Stranahan Theater. All right, huge game in college football coming up on Saturday. The big game nationally. The Ohio State Buckeyes hosting the second-rated Penn State Nittany Lions. Finally, a game in which we can talk about something where maybe the outcome is in question when we talk to the great voice of the Buckeyes, Paul Keels. Hey, Paul.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Good, my friend. Good. You know, all of these last several weeks that the Buckeyes have been feasting on some inferior competition, it's just about what can they get out of this, what kind of challenges do the opponents pose for them. But really, we kind of knew what the outcome was probably going to be. A little bit of a different story this week. The question is, do you think the Buckeyes could have gone soft a little bit during these last 5 weeks rather than, you know, being tested a little bit the way, well, I guess Penn State really wasn't even tested that much by Michigan, were they?
No, it didn't seem to be. You know, the way I would answer that question, Bob, is, as you well know, every Thursday you get to spend a little less than an hour with a head football coach at The Ohio State University. Mm-hmm. And getting that time, I don't think there's any chance that football team has gone soft for any reason whatsoever. And you know, remember, we're talking about a head coach who's got his undergraduate degree in psychology. So he knows how to work all of those things. And I think that if you listen to the comments that he's made in recent weeks, he's always put that phrase in there, we know what's coming down the pipe. So I think they knew that, you know, while they were doing all the things they were doing the last 5 weeks, that had to work as best it could to put them in a position to be ready for, you know, Michigan State at Iowa next week. Michigan State coming here in a couple of weeks, and then a couple of weeks after that playing in Ann Arbor. So I don't think that there's any way, at least as much as a coach can handle them, or coaches, that this football team has gone soft because of the crazy numbers they've put up.
Yeah, and of course, when I say soft, I don't mean it in those terms. Just in, you know, in terms of kind of, you know, having an easy go of things, having a lot of second and third string guys getting a lot of playing time in the second halves of games and that sort of thing. Whereas now this is expected to be, I think we would all agree, to be one of these dogfights where it could very well come down to the last possession. And you know, when you haven't had one of those for a while, well, really, you know, a challenge as stiff as the one that you got when you lost back on September 9th at home against Oklahoma. So that's kind of what I meant when I said soft. But you're right. You know, Urban is a master motivator. As you point out, he puts that psychology degree to great use. To that end, do you think, is there any psychological, you know, gamesmanship that he is playing with his kids, talking about last year and the need to avenge the loss at State College?
You know, that question came up Monday in his weekly press conference, and he replied to it saying he wasn't sure if they would make it part of it as a coaching staff, but also acknowledged that certainly the players are thinking about that. So I guess we really won't know until after the fact. More than likely what they're going to do, and this is just a guess, all they have to do is point out on film and in their discussions just how good Penn State is. And I think that by itself probably will do an awful lot. You know, he made the comment Monday, revenge sometimes works, sometimes it doesn't. But again, you just kind of speculate and you think if this football team and if these young men that probably a lot of them sat around watching that game last Saturday, they paid attention to Penn State all season, and as they've studied it this week, it probably wouldn't take a lot for them to realize the level they're going to need to play at to be able to beat a team that's at the level that Penn State is.
Paul, you and I have talked about scheduling before, generally in terms of, you know, powerhouse teams that schedule soft non-conference games, and sometimes it comes back to bite them in the eyes of the committee, blah, blah, blah. And you point out that most of these arrangements are made, you know, a few years in advance. So maybe this is an irrelevant question, but I'll ask it anyway. this perfect scenario that Ohio State had with a bye week prior to the Penn State game. They did get to sit back and watch that game on television, learn a little bit more about Penn State against another ranked team like Michigan, ranked at the time anyway. Was that strategic or just fortuitous?
Well, I wouldn't say it was strategic because schools have no say in when their bye occurs. But it certainly can't hurt. If you remember, Bob, last year Penn State had their bye the week before they played Ohio State, and that weekend that Penn State was off, Ohio State was struggling to beat Wisconsin in overtime in Madison. So, you know, I think that there's probably some strategic value when the bye occurs at this time of year. You know, the other point that ties into what you're asking about, if you remember in the Nebraska game 2 weeks ago, you had three starters that went out of the game early, Paris Campbell, Jamarco Jones, and Jalen Holmes. Fortunately, those injuries as they occurred were not serious, and not playing very much in the Nebraska game and then having a bye the Saturday after probably was beneficial in that regard. But, you know, you'll hear coaches say that the bye is what you make of it. If you win afterwards, then it was good. If you lose afterwards, then it's not good. But, you know, certainly there can be some good things that can come out of it.
Compare this team, Paul, and I'm obviously asking you to speculate here because I'm asking you before they play Penn State rather than afterwards, but compare this team as you see it going into the Penn State showdown Saturday to the team that lost to Oklahoma.
Well, we think that the pass defense is better, but we think that against the last five opponents they played. We think the passing game is better, but again, that comes against those that they faced in the last month plus. So those are the things that we think we know. The thing that maybe is a little more tangible, and this is something you and I have talked about a lot, the confidence factor is much higher. The momentum, the rhythm, whatever you want to call it, their mojo, that is much higher. So, and also, very importantly, is there's been more game exposure to both experienced players and younger players. So there's more ammunition for the coaches to evaluate. There's more situations for them to see how people have handled things. And, you know, while there hasn't been much in the way of difficult situations occur as far as an outcome of a game, certainly you can look at maybe some difficult situations within a game and to see how players have responded to it. So that's kind of what we guess and hope is the difference between then and now.
I think those are fair, especially the passing game, really on both sides, pass defense and the passing game, as some receivers have developed over the course of the last 5 weeks, and that's what JT needed, certainly. We talk about deep threats and, you know, guys who weren't there. We talked about some guys who were not necessarily healthy who are now going to be bigger threats perhaps against Penn State than they were able to be against Oklahoma. What about the other side, though? Let's talk about Saquon Barkley. Is he as good as he appeared to be against Michigan? His rushing total wasn't through the roof, 108 yards, but such a dynamic player, does so many, can catch the ball, can do so many different things. I saw something today, and let me see if I can find it. I might even still have it up in front of me here. It was a comparison of, yeah, it's Bleacher Report wrote an article with a little video here of him side by side with Bo Jackson. Now, that's some pretty heady stuff right there. Yeah. Bo Jackson is one of the greatest of all time, but Barkley is having a runaway Heisman type of season. How good is he in your mind, Paul Keels?
I think he is beyond good. You know, and you mentioned last Saturday, his rushing numbers maybe didn't blow you away, but his one rushing play, that second play from scrimmage when he took a direct snap and just raced through the defense, it was as impressive as anything you'd see. When you consider that he is the pass-catching threat that he is coming out of the backfield, mm-hmm. and that they feature him as a kick returner, and he is so dangerous there, and in a day and age when a lot of teams and a lot of coaches would not want to expose their number one tailback in a kick return situation, that just shows you the impact that he can have on a football game. Remember a couple of years ago, Bob, he came into Columbus and rushed for, I think it was like 190 yards in a loss, in a decisive loss. So this is a kid that it just didn't all of a sudden become good. And plus with his size, too, that's also what makes him difficult. He's not easily arm tackled. He's made some great, almost, and this might be sacrilegious to say, some Barry Sanders type of moves with his starting and stopping and his jump cutting and things like that. He's the real deal, and, you know, I think we're going to get a chance Saturday to watch in person a very, very special one.
I think we're committing sacrilege left and right. In one conversation, he's been compared to Bo Jackson and Barry Sanders. I mean, all that's left is God. You know, throw in a Jim Brown and a Gale Sayers reference. That ain't something special. obviously, you can't just stack the line, though, right? You can't just go 8 men in the box and say we're going to do everything we can to get to Saquon Barkley because Trace McSorley can beat you, too.
He can beat you both ways. And, you know, Michigan found that out when he rushed for 3 touchdowns last week. He certainly is a passing threat. And when you consider, you know, Deshaun Hamilton, DeAndre Tompkins, and then also the guy that can be scary is their tight end, Mike Gesicki. At 6'6", 6'7", and, you know, with volleyball and basketball skills, he's just a matchup nightmare. So that's part of what, as good as Saquon Barkley is, everything that has made them dangerous is all of the different things that they can do. And just ask Iowa, because it was somebody we haven't mentioned yet, Juwan Johnson, who caught the game-winning touchdown against Iowa. So, you know, they certainly have a lot of different threats on offense that can give a team difficulty.
So Paul, what's your gut telling you? You know, I mean, this is a playoff game, essentially, right? Well, let me rephrase. For Ohio State, it is. A second loss pretty much is going to keep you out of any hope, I would imagine, even if you somehow came back and won, you know, the Big Ten East, you know, with some stumbles by Penn State or whatever. Very, very unlikely. You can almost say that if you lose this one, a second loss means you're out of the playoff running. Now you're just hoping for New Year's Six. Penn State has not lost yet, but they certainly don't want to have it happen now. Is this essentially a playoff game then for from that angle?
Well, and let's not forget too, Michigan State is still in the picture in the East because they've not lost a conference game yet. So, and they will play Penn State and Ohio State in the following 2 weeks. But if you're right in the fact that it's a playoff game decider for Ohio State, you know, possibly Penn State could still survive and go on to some bigger things if they lose the football game. But, you know, the biggest thing really, Bob, is I think this will tell us how good each of these teams are. You know, again, like you started off asking about, since the Oklahoma game, what do we take from what Ohio State has done against the opponents they faced? With what Penn State has done, you know, really, there are people who maybe would dissect their schedule and say, okay, you know, they had to play on the road at Iowa, they survived that. You know, I think the Michigan game certainly should tell us maybe more about how good Penn State is and less about the difficulties that Michigan may be having. So, yeah, I think it will be something that will give us an idea of how good both of these schools are. And really, you know, if it's a close, hard-fought game, still tell us that they both are pretty good.
You always talk about, not always, but you've frequently brought up Urban and his psychology and his psychology degree and how he uses that to his advantage. I don't know if James Franklin has a psychology degree, but do you think he's using the, hey, we beat those guys last year, we were the Big Ten champions, we were the ones who should have been in the playoffs, not Ohio State. Does he use that at all this year to get them a little bit more hype to go into the horseshoe and kind of take some vengeance on the Buckeyes?
You know, that's an interesting question because somebody brought that up earlier today, and it's the first really I had thought about that. You know, James Franklin is an excitable, enthusiastic, charismatic guy, and he seems to have that type of enthusiasm publicly and probably within his team that wears off to within them to really have gotten them on the run that they were last year. You would imagine he probably uses those kind of things. But the other thing you hear coaches talk a lot about is making it about themselves, meaning making it about the team themselves, not the individual coach.
Sure, sure.
But making it about that program and how it – I mean, you know, I think everybody really looked at what Penn State did last year when they beat Ohio State and when they beat Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship game. And even though they lost, they really made a great showing in the Rose Bowl against USC. I think that really made a big statement of Penn State coming back. That can be added to if they come to Columbus and win. Remember, they've only won twice in Columbus since they've been in the Big Ten. And for Ohio State, it can kind of be another stamp of validation that this is a football team that has shown they can do what they did in 2014, overcome an early season loss and play themselves back into consideration. So, you know, I think that there's a lot of that kind of stuff that we want to guess and we want to think about. Who knows what goes on in the minds of those coaches and those players within those facilities. But that's the fun part, and that's what makes it exciting to see when they can actually put it out on the field and run it up against one another. That's the fun part of seeing who's most motivated going into it and then who's most motivated as the game is going on.
So, Paul, as I let you go, can I put your feet to the fire? At the end of the day at around 7:30 on Saturday, are the Buckeyes still in the playoff picture or not?
Oh, boy. You know what? I'm not one of those that predicts games and makes guesses and things like that, Bob, but I think – and what I'm hoping more than anything is that this game lives up to its expectations. I think we all expect this to be a good game. I think we can all anticipate what the atmosphere is going to be at Ohio Stadium. This is the you know, the premier home conference game this year for Ohio State, and there's so much at stake. Obviously, if they win it, yes. But I think I'm just hoping that this is a game that lives up to what everybody thinks it's going to be. And if it's not, and it's a lopsided game, you certainly hope Ohio State's on the front end of that.
Paul Keels, when you run for office, let me know. I will make a campaign contribution.
Thank you, Bob. I appreciate
that. That was brilliantly done. Paul Keels, the voice of the Buckeyes. You'll hear him. 3:30 is the kick on Saturday from Columbus. Paul, thanks so much for the time. Always, we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, Bob, take care.
You got it. There you go. All right, 4:26, Ohio State and Penn State on Saturday, as we mentioned, 3:30. That is going to be some kind of fun. Kush, he wouldn't make the pick. You make the pick. Buckeyes, do they – I mean, you know, he agreed it is kind of a playoff game for Ohio State. Maybe Penn State could recover from a loss and still make the playoffs if they do then beat Michigan State next week, giving them their first loss in conference, and then continue to go on and win the Big Ten or Big Ten East and the Big Ten Championship. But Ohio State, even if they did come back, they would have two losses, and that's going to be very hard for a committee to say yeah. So this is you know, a playoff game. It's win or you're out of the playoff hunt for Ohio State. What's your call?
Right now I'm leaning towards Ohio State, but only by about a field goal or two. I think this is going to be a back and forth in terms of the scoreboard anyway. I'm not suggesting it's going to be a high-scoring game, but I do think as of right now the Buckeyes will end up edging this out.
Why? What makes it? Is it the home field?
Home has a little bit to do with it. I mean, that's a striking stat. I didn't realize it was actually that bad from a Penn State point of view that they've only won twice in Columbus.
Yeah.
And they came into the Big Ten, what was that, 91 or something? So it's been...
Has it been that long?
Yeah. It was very... No. It was. If you think about it, it was early
90s. 26 years they've been in the Big Ten?
Yeah.
No.
I think so.
Wow, I never would have guessed that. I'm not saying wrong. I'm saying no as in I can't believe that.
It's been that long already, right? So, and that's why that stat that Paul threw out there, that jumps out to me a little bit. And, you know, the Buckeyes are still, you know, a strong team in their own right. And I do right now think that they're going to win by a field goal or two, but it's going to be close. And I would not be shocked in any way, shape, or form if Penn State ended up winning.
I don't think it was 91, Jim, only because I googled up 1992 Big Ten football standings, and Penn State is not counted among them.
Then it must have been 93.
Okay, maybe it was 93. I'm just like
I know it was early 90s. That's all I remember off the top of my head.
Even if it's 93, you know, and I of course looked that up not to embarrass you. I'm just stunned by it. I just can't believe it's been that long for whatever reason. Even if it was 93 or 4 or 5, that kills me that it's been over 20 years that Penn State's been a part of the Big Ten.
And they've only won twice in Columbus in that time. Now that they're in the same division, they pretty much played Penn State every single year.
That would be like around 2-8 or 2-9 or something like that, assuming every other year for the last 20, 21, 22, whatever it is, years. They'd be 2-8 or 2-9 or something in that vein. All right, here's what we're going to do, Kush, because we've got to clear some space after the bottom of the hour Sports Center coming our way that you're going to pitch to us. For Coach Jason Candle, head coach of the Rockets, who play tonight, we're going to have a preview of this matchup at Ball State coming up here in just about 8, 9, 10 minutes. On the way to that, however, how about this week's Sweet Deal? Sweet Deal of the Week is a $50 gift certificate to Charlie's Pizza in Sylvania. Just go to 1065theticket.com tomorrow morning starting at 9 a.m. for a Sweet Deal gift certificate, half off. Just $25. It's a $50 gift certificate you'll get for half price, $25 while supplies last online. Or you can get one for 100% off right now. A freebie. Caller 6 this time to 866-240-1065. Caller 6 to 866-240-1065. We'll set you up with a $50 gift certificate. That's this week's Sweet Deal of the Week to Charlie's Pizza in Sylvania. Local Sports Center to follow. Coach Candle after that, right here on the ticket.
And welcome back into the extravaganza. Jim Kushlin here. Time to continue some college football talk. It is game day tonight for the Toledo Rockets. The start of Maction begins. They're on the road
at Ball State in Muncie tonight. That's a 7 o'clock kickoff by the bye. Quick turnaround as the Rockets last played this past Saturday at the Glass Bowl, all over Akron, 48-21. So the Rockets now stand at 6-1 on the year, 3-0 in Mid-American Conference play, tied with Northern Illinois at this moment for that top spot in the West Division. And help us talk all things Rocket football, we once again welcome in the head coach of the Toledo Rockets back on the program with us, Jason Candle. Hi, Coach. How you doing today?
Great, Jim. How are you?
Not too bad. First, before we get into some on a little bit on Akron, a little bit about Ball State tonight, it's obviously the start of Maction, the weekday games, but for you guys specifically, a very, very quick turnaround having just played on Saturday. When you have a quick turnaround like this, which doesn't happen all that often, how does that throw off your practice schedules? You guys, of course, creatures of habit.
Yeah, that's an interesting balance. You have to be able to condense days and find out what the real important pieces of what the preparation of the week really look like, and not that it's all not important, but the critical things that you really have to focus in on and try to find time to get those moments of practice or film work or walkthrough, whatever that may be, get them in your preparation plan for the week, yet still balance the fact that you can't kill your players. You got to get them ready to go from a physical standpoint and certainly a mental standpoint, because we want a fresh team to take the field Thursday night when we play, and but also a prepared team as well.
How much of the preparation might get accidentally sidetracked just because of lack of time?
None. For the players' standpoint of things, you got to continue to challenge them from the mental preparation and again, being ready to go emotionally. And what I mean by emotionally is they have to be confident in their body and then know that the last 5 days of work has been the best plan possible to put them in the best position to be successful. So, some of it's it's calming down a little bit, later in the week, and making sure that their legs feel good and their bodies feel good, and some of it's a little Jedi mind trick to get them ready to go. But it's a balancing act, and Ball State's going through the same thing, and every team that plays on Thursday Night Football that played the previous Saturday has to deal with the same thing. So it's kind of becoming a routine, because at this time of the year you can get college football about on any night of the week anymore.
Yeah, we're actually at that moment in time, whether it be MAC. I've seen some the Sun Belt sometimes does the same kind of thing. So yeah, we are literally in that time period now where there's some kind of football, college or NFL, every single day of the week. Let's look back on what happened this past Saturday at the Glass Bowl, 48-21 over Akron. And it's interesting. Last time we talked, Coach, it was the Central Michigan game, and there was weather being a factor, so you guys were able to run the ball exceedingly well. This time, not as much of a factor, and Logan Woodside putting up monster numbers in this one, 304 yards, 5 touchdowns, did have the 1 interception, but only had 24 passing attempts, 17 of them completed. With the weather that we saw in Mount Pleasant a couple weeks ago, not as much of a factor, able to go back to more of what you guys try to do. Talk to me about Logan's effort in this.
Yeah, I think he got off to a great start. Obviously any time that, you're able to, we had 10 different guys catch a pass in the game on Saturday, so anytime you're able to distribute the ball to 10 different players, I think you're playing your position at a really high level, because ultimately that's what we're asking you to do, is make everybody around you better. And the more guys we have involved, in the distribution of the football, I think the better we're going to be. So, we got a tip ball there on the second or third series there where we got intercepted. But other than that, he was lights out all day and playing like a senior quarterback who's played in our system for a few years now should. And but I always credit his preparation and what he puts into it during the week. It's a full-time gig for him. It's not, hey, I'm on the football team and it's fun to go be the starting quarterback and everybody to sing my praise when I play well. And I'm a ghost during the week. I'm never around the facility. The kid's literally here all the time, and he loves it. He invests in it, and our team certainly feeds off of that. And when you prepare really hard and you have success, you should expect that success. And when you have that, there's some confidence that builds there, and not only does that affect him individually, but it affects our team as a whole.
And you guys were able to jump out with Logan's effort, and others, of course, too, and we'll get to some of them here in just a couple of minutes. Jump out 21-0, first couple of drives you guys had, getting in the end zone. You did mention the one turnover on a tip pass, but you also got an interception, one of the two turnovers you forced on the day to help lead to your third touchdown. So you're up 21-0, you know, after one. But what I really like, Coach, is coming out of the locker room. It's a 24-7 spread at the half, and you guys go out and get two more touchdowns to really break it open in the third quarter. Talk to me about the relentlessness that this offense can be when it's clicking.
Yeah, I think the third quarter of the entire season so far has kind of been our ally. I mean, you know, Miami, I'd like to forget that one, that third quarter. But other than that game, I mean, we've been great in the third quarter. Our coaches have done a good job of adjusting things at halftime and getting a plan in place to go, you know, be competitive. And our kids certainly have a certain appreciation for each other that they always have the ability to reset and understand what they're trying to do in this. And this team has shown great fight and great resolve for the entire season. So, big to get a couple scores there in the third quarter and push that lead out to a little bit of a comfortable distance. And then we were able to play a bunch of young guys and get some guys some valuable repetitions on offense and defense and a bunch of guys in on special teams. So, you know, learning experience for our guys because, you know, the second unit there on defense gave up a couple scores and now they got the first unit barking at them of how they didn't hold it up to their standard. And, you know, that's a good thing. That promotes growth and, you know, sometimes you can go through the course of a season where a second or third team player doesn't get many reps the entire season. So to get it out to a comfortable lead and to be able to play some of those guys, I thought that was really key and really big and will help our football team down the road.
We're talking with head coach Jason Candle of the Toledo Rockets, 48-21 this past Saturday over Akron at the Glass Bowl. Quick turnaround as they take the field again tonight in Muncie against Ball State, beginning of action play. Talk to me about some of those specifically, guys, on the second unit, because you got a couple of the other quarterbacks in for a brief time. We're able to see some of them as well as some of the other guys. Give me some individual standouts from those units, if you could.
Yeah, I think, like I said, Logan was able to. You know, these guys weren't all on the second unit, but some guys were, you know, able to get in there with the first team was, you know, you got Denzel McKinley Lewis scoring a touchdown. You got Desmond Phillips scoring a touchdown. You got, Jordan Fisher with a couple catches. You got Reggie Gilliam with a catch. You got Drew Rossi, a freshman tight end, with a catch. You got, you know, three backs that carried the ball a lot. You know, you got three quarterbacks in the game. You played eight or nine linemen. And on defense, you know, we continue to have a really good rotation in the front seven. And then the second team corners and a couple of them guys in the back half at safety have done a really good job of coming in there and filling in. And, you know, the guys that were impressive were some of the freshmen, some of the guys that, you know, we've decided that, you know, early in the year or a couple of weeks ago that we were going to play. You know, Victor Williams is our special teams player of the week at safety and because of his efforts of running down on kickoff and doing some of those things on, you know, some of the special teams he was on. But he's a true freshman, and Tyson Anderson from St. John's is in there playing great. Bryce Mitchell got a couple catches in the game, you know, a freshman receiver from Bowser here in the city. And, you know, those type of guys are going to be valuable for our program moving forward, and to get them, you know, heat-of-the-moment battle reps where they played really good, it's really encouraging to see.
And obviously with the big lead and able to get some other guys in, it also meant a good aggregate day from the running game, because obviously at a point when you have a lead like that, teams, of course, like to run the ball to help get that clock down. Terry Swanson, the only 20 carries to get over 100 yards in this one, his 11th career game over 100, but you got contributions from Tompkins, from Seymour, who got in the end zone with 71. Talk to me about their efforts.
Yeah, those three guys will play in every football game. You know, that's just the rotation that we have. That's what we believe in keeping guys fresh. And, you know, it's a position where obviously you probably get, you know, the most, you get hit the most other than the guys in the trenches. But, they've all been solid all year long. And I give our offensive line, again, Saturday we're playing without starting left guard, starting center, starting right guard again for the second week in a row. So, you know, to have three new starters in there on the offensive line and to rush for 300 yards for the second week in a row, I thought that was outstanding. It's a lot of individual efforts by those young guys stepping in on the offensive line, and certainly, you know, really good job by our back. So You know, they're making believers out of us. Maybe, you know, heck, maybe Coach Kendall had it wrong. Maybe those guys should have been starting from the beginning of the season. I don't know. But, no, they've done a good job. And I think that's, you know, that speaks volumes to our team and, you know, what the program we've put in place here to, you know, it's just, you can't cry about injuries. You got to get the next guy ready to go and get ready to play.
Now, that obviously leads to an obvious follow-up in this regard. What is the status of some of these linemen coming into this one, especially with the quick turnaround?
Yeah, they'll all, you know, those guys will be out again. You know, so we'll be playing with the same guys that played Saturday, and you know, we press on and see if we can, you know, hopefully get some guys back. And now it's a matter of, you know, anybody you get back now is a bonus, because it just becomes depth, and it's a, you know, you've kind of settled into this routine of what, you know, what it looks like the last few weeks here without them, and you're playing really good. You know, so now if you can, it can be encouraging and uplifting to your team to get some of these guys back, because now you know that it's just one more body you get to throw into the mix, and some fresh legs at even at some key spots. So that would be huge if we were able to do that. But we'll wait and see.
We're talking with head coach Jason Candle of the Toledo Rockets here on the Extravaganza. 48-21 this past Saturday at the Glass Bowl over Akron. Now on the road tonight against Ball State. Before we get into Ball State, one last thing on the Akron game. Trying to find something on a game like this to a nitpick, and I sure found one. 11 penalties, 104 yards against you guys. So this score could have even been worse if not for a number like that. That's obviously got to be the thing. No matter how good things are going, that makes you go. Just pull your hair out when you see numbers like that on the penalty side of things.
It does. You know, there's some of those penalties are you know, they're you know, stupid mistakes or what I would call selfish penalties. But most of those are effort ones, and the ones that are effort plays, I don't get too caught up in that, because, you know, if a guy's giving great effort and he's going to get that corrected. You know, if you can't do your responsibility because you don't know what to do, or you get out there and you malfunction, then now we got a real problem. But the effort penalties and things like that, I'm okay with some of that stuff. I can get over that, you know, but you're certainly trying to, I'd love to gain 630 yards every week and have zero penalties, but, you know, it didn't work that way Saturday. We gained 630 yards of offense and had 11. But you know, Akron didn't have a penalty in the entire game, but I feel a lot better this week than probably the Akron coach does. So I'll live with that if we can continue to play like this and play well like this, and some of those are effort mistakes. But the little stupid ones, like I said, we got to get those cleaned up.
Absolutely. Now it's tonight in Muncie against Ball State. Always a tricky place to play for anybody. Muncie just happens to be seemingly one of those places, you know, in this conference, very similar to Mount Pleasant from a couple of weeks ago. And then, of course, factoring in the short turnaround for both of you guys. First, talk to me about what Ball State is able to do. They come in, they're struggling a bit, 0-3 in conference so far, 2-5 overall. But again, in Muncie, not to be taken lightly.
Yeah, it's a place that traditionally the Rockets haven't played very well for whatever reason. But, you know, a lot of parity in our league, and, you know, you and I have talked about this before. Anybody on any given week in our conference can win, and, you know, we have to continue to play to the standard that our locker room is set for ourselves. And, you know, we're creatures of habit, and we try to do the same routine each and every day and put together good work days, and hopefully that leads to success whatever day of the week to kick the football off, and we have a competition. So I think, you know, our team will be ready to go, and we'll come out and play really hard and rely on our good seniors to lead us to hopefully another victory.
And give me some of the keys for you guys to get that victory.
Well, for me it's the same every week, and, you know, whether we're playing the Elon Phoenix here in our opener, or we're down at Miami playing the Hurricanes, or any of these league games that we have, you know, you have to take care of the football and win the turnover battle. You know, you have to do a great job of limiting the rushing yards by your opponent, and which, you know, will take away some of those explosive plays. And then you have to run the ball and control the clock yourself, and yet take your shots down the field. And really, offensively for us, it's about taking care of the ball and getting our playmakers the ball in space. And if we're able to do that, you know, we're usually a really difficult team to knock out.
It is the Toledo Rockets in Muncie tonight to take on Ball State. Start of action all weekday games for the Rockets from here on in. 7 o'clock the kickoff for this one tonight. Coach, best of luck out there tonight. And let's hope we're talking about another Rockets a win. That would be 4 in a row, and we reconvene and recap this one and get ready for another big one against Northern Illinois when we talk next time.
Thanks so much, Jim. Go Rockets.
That is head coach of the Toledo Rockets, Jason Candle, taking a few minutes and talking with us. Rockets in action tonight, beginning a action play. It goes like this: Thursday, Wednesday, Friday for the remainder of the schedule for Toledo. So it's all the weekday games from here on in. And an interesting lineup, too. You get Ball State tonight, which is always a tough place to play. You know, for whatever reason, coach pointed out there, yeah, for whatever reason, the Rockets over the course of history don't fare as well as one would think, even when Ball State is down. Kind of like this year, they're 2-5, 0-3 coming into this one. But it's on the road tonight in Ball State. Then next week, suddenly, hey, shades of just 2-3-plus years ago, Northern Illinois coming to the Glass Bowl for a very, very big one next Thursday, November 2nd. And why is that a very, very big one? Because right now, Toledo and Northern Illinois, at this moment, both 3-0 in league play. So they are both tied for the top spot in that West Division. Incidentally, the Huskies also play tonight. They're at home to get Eastern Michigan in this one tonight before both teams will then meet at the Glass Bowl next Thursday. So once again, that has become a gigantic game, just as it was just these couple of years ago. And then the Rockets on a Wednesday, November 8th at Ohio. That's still, of course, one of the favorites in that East Division. And of course, right now they are leading, tied with Akron, because, you know, that loss back on Saturday at the Glass Bowl for the Zips, first conference loss. So they are now tied at the top of the East Division with those Ohio Bobcats. So that's an at Ohio on November 8th. And Wednesday the 15th, there's your battle of I-75 against the Bowling Green Falcons. And of course, the schedule closes out on Black Friday, November 24th, at back at the Glass Bowl against Western Michigan. So it's a tougher slate coming up. Again, Muncie tough to play in. Then you get back-to-back games against chief competitor in this West Division, the way this season is shaping up. And then on the road to the East Division favorite. Then it's rivalry week before you get Western Michigan game, and from the Rockets' point of view, that's a vengeance game because, of course, last year on the same Black Friday in Kalamazoo, Western ended up winning that game to help them, you know, go undefeated. They beat the Rockets, won the MAC title game, and then the next time we saw them, of course, was in the Cotton Bowl. So very tough schedule, I think, coming up for the Rockets, even though some of the records, like specifically Ball State's and the Falcons at Bowling Green, may not indicate it, but those are two tough games because they're both on the road. And I mentioned Northern Illinois and Ohio. That's in back-to-back weeks. In fact, only 6 days separation because you go from a Thursday to a Wednesday on that one. And then Western Michigan, at least that game's at the Glass Bowl as they're kind of retooling some things after their glorious season last year for Western. So a very interesting, tough part of the schedule coming up for the Rockets, but it should be entertaining, and it starts tonight with the Rockets in Muncie against Ball State. 7 o'clock, the kickoff time coming up for that one. And that's going to do it for this Thursday edition of the Extravaganza. Thanks so much for hanging out with us today. Stick around. I'm in for Mike Miller on Drive Time coming up next. He's north of the border on Hockey Simon. Then a little bit later tonight, Miami at Baltimore. 8 o'clock, the coverage time for the 8:30 kick. Courtesy of our friends at Westwood One. It's Thursday, so that means the next NFL Week 8 kicks off tonight. Miami at Baltimore, and we'll have it for you at 8 right here on the ticket. But quick time out for top of the hour, then we're going to shift gears to Drive Time, hosted by yours truly, in for Mike Miller. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. Enjoy the Rockets game tonight. Should be a dandy one way or the other. We'll talk about all that and a lot more when we reconvene for a Friday edition tomorrow. See ya.